Welcome to Ales and Strange Tales. We are your hosts,
Chris Moyers
and Dan Stickney. We like to crack open a beer or two and share tales of the supernatural, paranormal, and just plain strange.
So sit back, grab yourself a drink, and dive into the strange with us. Welcome back to Ales and Strange Tales, Season 4, Episode 6.
Yeah, something like that.
How are you doing today, Daniel?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Really, 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 really poorly. I'm very tired. I have no idea what I'm going to do today here.
Didn't come prepared at all. Don't even have a beer, do you?
I didn't even have time to get beer. It's like a slave labor situation at my job. They're trying to kill me.
Should just cancel it. You don't even have a beer. It's not even ales. I have one at least.
I considered canceling, but the repercussions for that would be drastic, I'm assuming.
Devastating.
You'd yell at me. You'd get the bartenders to fucking give me shit about it.
Yep.
But I'm very tired, so this might be worse than usual. We'll let you decide on that. Well, what beer did you bring, even though I didn't bring one?
I don't remember if I've had this one. May have. Maybe season one or so. It's from two brothers down in Aurora. Their Pinball Pale Ale.
Oh, look at that. That looks cool.
Yeah, pretty bright colors going on, you know, a little pinball in the middle there.
It's American colors, dude.
Yeah, red. What colors are those, mister?
Red, white, and blue. I'm hoping, right? Yeah. I'm semi-colorblind, if anyone's curious about that.
Yeah, it's a 4.9er. I've had about three of them already.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're starting a little late. I got off way too late today.
Yeah. Well, 2.5. I think I had 2.5. Something like that. But either way.
Well, I'm going to go right into what I'm going to be reading about. I am doing another story from Troy Taylor that I just lost.
Good old Troy.
And wait one. It's about the Macomb Firestarter. Holy shit. It was on my birthday that this occurred in 1948.
Oh.
August 14th. Wasn't like yesterday or whatever the fuck day. When was my birthday? 2 days ago?
What is today? Wednesday?
The 16th. So Monday? It was 2 days ago. Wow.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Any gifts or anything?
Nah.
Oh, nothing?
Just my presence.
Yeah, that's a good gift. Thanks. What story are you touching on today?
Well, I got another one from our old pal, Steve.
Good old Steve.
He sent us so many crazy stories. I got one about, he says there's two green demons he's seen.
Really?
And if we got time, I got some strange news.
I do not have strange news, so we probably will have time. I was going to ask you, did I already ask you? Are you considering going to Renaissance Fair Labor Day weekend and handing out these fucking stickers that we got?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's a possible consideration.
Well, why don't you do us all a favor and figure it out, dude?
I swear there's something going on Labor Day, but I don't know.
There probably is some. Well, figure it out. Let me know.
But you should just go and just hand them out.
Yeah, I went by myself once. It's not that fun by your fucking self.
Yeah. I thought Brad was going to go.
Brad sucks. Who knows what he's going to do? Well, since you got weird news, I'd say you go first.
Strange news, but yeah.
Shit, strange news. Damn it.
All right, it's from Stevie. The two green demons. First one was in Texas. A girl sitting across from me in a living room in a chair directly in front of me turned into a complete green demon right in front of me. I never heard of green demons.
Me either.
He was smiling at me. He filled up his host from her head to her feet. I started praying and people thought I was attacking her, so I got thrown out. As I was going out the door, I turned and the demon was gone and I could see her again. It was past my understanding. I wanted to help her and around 10 people pushed me out the door. What I saw in that girl blew me away. I wasn't right for a few days. Shock. Truth, he says. The second green demon. I lived in an apartment complex growing up. I had to go upstairs to use the bathroom. I left the bathroom and turned to go down the stairs and froze in fear. At the bottom of the stairs was a all green demon crouching at the bottom of the stairs.
What in the fuck?
It was just looking up at me. I ran to my mother's room and woke her up. She didn't believe me. She took me to a shrink.
Really?
Well, damn. Just like that. What I saw, I described to him in detail.
That wasn't a smart move.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Lock him up, right?
Yeah.
He was blown away, apparently. He couldn't respond. There was a silence after I told him. Then he walked me out to my mother and said there's nothing wrong with him.
Oh, wow.
He's fine. I won't forget the encounter or the other one. Truth, he says.
Well, what the fuck were the demons? He just saw him and that was it?
That's it.
All right.
This guy, he's apparently like a magnet.
Yeah, apparently so.
Supernatural.
Lots of crazy shit. Yeah. Well, thanks for the submission, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Keep him coming.
Yeah, I can't believe the shrink said, yeah, he's fine. Yeah. Nothing wrong here.
Just leave him alone.
All right, this is going to suck real bad. Real fucking bad. I'm so tired. I don't even know if I can read. But we're going to do it for the fans, man.
And he didn't pre-read it, I'm sure, so.
I did not. I looked at the end to make sure there's something to it, but. All right. I'm going to try my best here. This is from Troy Taylor. Once again, thank you very much. This is entitled The Macomb Firestarter.
You're a twisted firestarter.
On August 14th, 1948, a barn burned down to the ground on the farmer of Charles... What? On the farmer of Charles Wiley?
On the farm, I guess.
We'll go with on the farm of Charles Wiley. It does say farmer, though. Who lived outside of Macomb, Illinois. Such an event would not seem to be much cause for alarm, except for the fact that the source of the fire has truly never been explained. Plus... It was just one of hundreds of fires that broke out on this property in the summer of 1948.
Hundreds? Oh,
hundreds. The only person connected to each of those fires seemed to be his niece, a teenager named Wynette, who may have been starting them with her fucking mind.
What the fuck?
Isn't that wild? Following her parents' bitter divorce, Wynette and her father moved to the Wiley farm. Wynette was unhappy and disturbed, and emotions were running high that summer, which may have been the reason for the mysterious fires. They began on August 7th. At the time, the residents of the farm included Wiley, his wife, his brother-in-law, Wynette's father, Arthur McKeel, and McKeel's two children, Arthur Jr., 8, and Wynette, who had recently turned 13. The first fire began not as a blaze, but as a small brown spot that appeared on the wallpaper in the living room of the Wiley farmhouse. That first spot was followed by another and then another. The spots would appear spread out several inches as they smoldered, and then, when they became hot enough, the spots burst into flames. The brown spots occurred day after day, leaving the family confused and befuddled. It's a great word.
Yeah.
Wiley called on several of his neighbors to investigate, but they were just as mystified as he was. However, many of them stayed on the property, crowding into the house and even sleeping on the floor in an attempt to help keep watch over the situation. Pans and buckets were filled with water and placed over the house, all over the house. And each time one of the fires broke out, it was quickly doused. Regardless, the fires kept popping up in front of the startled witnesses. As word spread, friends and neighbors came out to help, but could not find a cause for these fires to have started.
Weird.
Macomb's fire chief, Fred Wilson, was just as confused as everyone else. In the days that followed, fires also appeared outside the house on the front porch. Curtains were ignited in several of the rooms, and ironing boards burst into flame, and a cloth that was lying on the bed burned so hot it turned into ash. Chief Wilson had never seen anything like it before. Charles Wiley contacted his insurance company, and their investigators were just as confused. Deputy State Fire Marshal John Begard was contacted by Chief Wilson, and he too came to the Wiley farm. He was also confused by the strange events. Nobody has ever heard anything like this, he announced to the press. but I saw it with my own two eyes. In the week that followed, more than 200 fires broke out at the house.
Jeez.
An average of nearly 20 each day.
What?
Yeah. Finally, on August 14th, one of the blazes raged so out of control before the Macomb Fire Department could be summoned with trucks, the entire Wiley farmhouse was consumed. Charles Wiley drove posts into the ground and made a tent shelter for he and his wife, while McNeil and the children moved into the garage. The next day, while the Wileys were milking cows in the barnyard, the barn burst into flames and destroyed the building.
Jeez.
They're getting totally fucked.
Yeah.
2 days later, on Tuesday, several fires broke out on the walls of the milk house, which was being used as a kitchen and dining room for the family. On Thursday morning, there were two more fires, and a box that was filled with newspapers was found burning in the chicken house. A few minutes later, Miss Wiley opened a cupboard door in the milk house and discovered more newspapers smoldering on the shelf inside. There had been no one else in the building, and the cabinet had not been opened.
Weird.
There was no logical reason for the newspapers to have caught fire. Later that day, at 6 p.m., the farm's second barn caught fire. The blaze burned so hot that the entire building was destroyed in less than a half hour. Firefighters who arrived on the scene were unable to get close to the inferno. Only six small outhouses remained on the farm, so the family escaped to a nearby vacant house. Regardless, the fires continued. The United States Air Force even got involved in the mystery.
Damn.
They suggested that the fires could be caused by some sort of directed radiation, presumably from the Russians, but could offer no further assistance.
The Russians.
Fucking Russians, man. By the end of the following week, the farm was swarming with spectators, curiosity seekers, official and self-appointed investigators, and reporters. Over 1,000 people came to the farm on August 22nd alone. Theorists and curiosity seekers posed their own theories and explanations. They ran the gamut from fly spray to radio waves, underground gas pockets, flying saucers, and more. Oh no, I just clicked out of the story, son of a bitch! One moment. Dude, can you? I just tapped the fucking screen. Oh boy. They ran the gamut from fly spray to radio waves, underground gas pockets, flying saucers, and more. The authorities had a more down-to-earth explanation in mind. They suspected arson. They realized that they could not solve the riddle as to how the fires appeared before the eyes of reliable witnesses, but things were getting out of hand on the Wiley farm. An explanation needed to be discovered, and discovered quickly. On August 30th, the mystery was publicly announced solved. The arsonist, according to the officials, was Wynette McNeil, the slight red-haired niece of Charles Wiley. They claimed that she was starting the fires with kitchen matches when no one was looking, ignoring the witness reports of the fires that sprung up from nowhere, including on the ceiling. Apparently, this little girl possessed some pretty amazing skills, along with a seemingly endless supply of matches. Even though she was never witnessed holding any matches. After hours of intense questioning, she allegedly confessed. She stated that she was unhappy, didn't like the farm, wanted to see her mother, and most telling, that she didn't have pretty clothes. The mystery was solved. This was in spite of the fact that witnesses to the fires had seen them appear on walls, floors, furniture, and all while Wynette was not even in the room.
Damn.
This explanation pleased the authorities, but not all of the reporters who were present seemed convinced. The hundreds of paranormal investigators who have examined the case over the years have not been reassured either. The columnist from Peoria newspaper who had covered the case from the beginning stated quite frankly that he did not believe the so-called confession. Neither did noted researcher of the unexplained Vincent Gaddis, who wrote about the case. He was convinced the case was a perfect example of poltergeist phenomena. What really happened on the Wiley farm? We probably will never know because the story just went away after that. Wynette was taken to Chicago for examination at the Illinois Juvenile Hospital, but was found to be mentally normal by Dr. Sophie Schroeder, a psychiatrist. She's a nice little kid caught in the middle of a broken home, she reported. She was later turned over to her grandmother and spent the rest of her teenage years untroubled by mysterious brown spots that appeared, spread, and burst into flames. The insurance company paid Wiley for the damage done to his home and farm, and the farmhouse was later rebuilt. Arthur McNeil and his son moved back in with the Wileys for a short time before eventually moving out of state. Why didn't she go back to her father?
I don't know.
Who knows? The fuck's that?
Maybe he's not no good.
Apparently, well, he got his son, but no one cares about fucking boys, huh? Fire officials abandoned the case after the confession cleared up the mystery for them, but privately, many of them that were involved continued to question what really occurred on the Wiley farm for years afterwards. Fire Chief Fred Wilson talked about the case for quite some time and later retired from his position, convinced that something unexplained had taken place. That's it.
That's a wild story.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah, that's a pretty good
one. We're not reading through it that much. It seemed to be a pretty good guide. Thank you again, Troy Taylor. Appreciate the stories.
Good old Troy.
And I hope you got a long, strange news because we are only 16 minutes in.
It might be kind of long. I got a few if need be, but...
Well, it is that time. Strange news, strange news, strange news.
All right. This one is off of... What website is this? HowAndWise.com.
Never heard of that.
Yeah. I don't even know where I found this, but...
Sure you're not making this shit up, dude? Yeah.
British ufologist claims he is fighting in a space war for 15-foot aliens against reptilian race.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
Oh, man. For some reason, people who claim to have had alien encounters said the extraterrestrials shared their knowledge with them. For some reason, people who claim to have had alien encounters said the extraterrestrials shared their knowledge with them. In some cases, the abductees showed the injuries got during alien experiments, discussed their spacecraft, the purpose of the visit to Earth, etc. But the story of Russ Collette is earth-shattering. He says he is a super soldier, quote-unquote,
wow,
fighting in an intergalactic war and has been abducted at least 60 times. Russ Collette, a 58-year-old man from Yorkshire, has been a UFO investigator for the past 20 years. He has appeared in a number of television documentaries as well as numerous television talk shows. He has been investigating the famous Berwyn Mountains UFO incident for almost 30 years.
What the fuck's that incident all about?
Probably, yeah. It's some British thing, I guess. He's also striving? I think it's striving. He's also striving to maintain a rigorous standard of scientific detachment to the investigation of UFOs and related phenomena, and calls on services of several experts in a number of different fields. Mr. Collette, who owned an industrial clothing business at the Carlisle Business Center in Manningham, left his job and adopted UFO research as his full-time job because of the number of strange sightings.
Lucky fucker, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. The most sensational claim made by Mr. Collette is that he has been fighting in an intergalactic war for 15-foot aliens since he was 28 years old. Next, he says that he has been abducted no less than 60 times. Metro writes, I don't know what Metro, it must have been some other ad they got this from. What is it? I don't know. The first time was when I, Collette, was 16 when I was traveling home on my motorbike. I went through a tunnel that I'd never seen before, and the next thing I knew, I was in what looked like a dentist surgery with 15-foot-tall alien men that looked very much like Dracula without the sharp teeth surrounding me. Dracula fucking aliens.
Yeah, wow.
I had some sort of tube pushed down my throat, and whatever liquid they pumped into me, it turned me into one of their super soldiers.
And they put him to war?
Apparently.
The fuck?
According to Mr. Collette, he has been part of an alien army that has been fighting a race called Dragos. Which are tall and scaly. They have heads like dragons. He describes his abduction place as a room covered in checks. I don't know what. Like a chessboard. What? Additionally, he has fought in otherworldly beings battles across the UK, Europe, and South America.
So there's wars going on that we're not aware of?
Apparently, yeah.
Like huge, large-scale alien wars?
Intergalactic fucking wars. He and his alien comrades reportedly use a glass ball located in the middle of a room which can transport them through space and time. He believes because of space wars, his body has generated chronic fatigue syndrome and post-traumatic stress disorder. He said, I've been gone for years and people don't realize, as 4 hours here is 4 years on one of the planets I've been to.
I was going to say, so he's fighting wars and he's dropping back off and no one knew he was gone? Yeah. But that explains it. There he's got go. Something for that.
Obviously, he does not remember fighting as his memory is always erased by him. So how does he know?
He's got a fucking fight wars in his mind. Fucking jag off. What is he talking about?
He further said that he struggled to remember the names of different ET races, but he drew their sketches to show how they look like. Even though he hardly remembers anything, Mr. Collette remembers being rushed to the hospital with a brain tumor. He quotes, I think, but there was nothing wrong with me. I just remembered leaving the hospital and forgetting certain things, like the names of the races and where it was that I'd travel to. Mr. Collette said he had been working on the case for many years and had been granted access to various official logs. This is fucking long. Mr. Collette has been leading UFO research for the famous Berwyn Mountains UFO. Blah, blah, blah. Mr. Collette has been the leading UFO reacher.
God, reacher.
Mr. Collette has been the leading UFO researcher for the famous Berwyn Mountains UFO incident for almost 30 years. We might have to look it up because I've never heard of it. This 1974 incident has been dubbed the Welsh Roswell.
Oh, that's
or
cool.
The Roz Welsh.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah. On Dave Schrader's radio show, Mr. Collette and his fellow UK UFO journalist Stephen Lumley discussed the amazing 1974 encounter between UFOs and the Royal Navy, an ambush by RAF fighter jets, and dozens of Army personnel helping to conceal the evidence of a downed UFO, and what happened to the otherworldly visitors from the recovery. Hey, you know, it goes on, but that's pretty much it.
Well, that dude's fucking wild, huh?
Yeah, it's funny. Oh, well, I can't remember anything, but...
Yeah, they zapped my mind, but I was in intergalactical wars.
Yeah, and they're 15 foot and blah, blah, blah.
Dracula fucking aliens.
Dracula fucking...
What the fuck is that?
Do they wear capes? Like, you know, like slick back hair?
Now, that would be awesome. Well, thank you very much, news place. What news place is it?
How and Why. It's probably some British shit or something.
Well, thank you very much, How and Why.
That's fucking...
That is a good one. I gotta get step up my strange news game, man, because you're whooping my ass in the strange news. What was the last strange news I covered?
I don't remember.
I'm sure it wasn't good, because it's not memorable, apparently. We don't even know what the fuck it was.
And you probably didn't read it over and explain it at the end.
Yeah, that's probably true. What the fuck was it? I can't think of it. All right, you have another one? Well, we're about 25 minutes, so we could just bow out.
We are going to get up on the TikTok.
Tickety-tockety.
By the time you hear this, we hopefully will be on
there. We'll probably be huge stars by then when you guys hear this.
Yeah, we'll probably be super famous. So look out for that. I'll put links on the Facebook when it happens.
And our email is alesandstrangetales@gmail.com. please submit some stories, please.
Yeah, check us out on Facebook, Instagram. I'm kind of active on there, but not too much, but I try.
We got fucking stickers. Did we talk about stickers yet?
Oh, yeah, we got stickers. If you want one, you got to come here and get it.
Yeah.
And tell a story.
Yeah, you got to give us a story for a fucking sticker.
Too damn expensive to send that shit out.
Well, I'm about to pass out because I'm just being tired and I don't like it. So we're going to bow out early. This is Chris Moyers.
Dan Stickney.
Cheers.
Cheers.